Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. I'm Daniel Weintraub, Editor-in-Chief and Project Director of the California Health Report, and your moderator for tonight's program. You can find the Commonwealth Club online at commonwealthclub.org. Tonight's discussion is undocumented and uninsured, generously underwritten by the California Wellness Foundation. While we'll be discussing a number of very important issues tonight, our overarching theme for the program will be the realities of healthcare, or lack thereof, for America's undocumented population, and in particular, what these realities are in the context of the recently implemented Affordable Care Act, which has provided over 30 million more Americans with health insurance. To address these issues, we turn to our panel of four experts in healthcare-related fields. First, we have John Gressman, President and CEO of the San Francisco Community Clinic Consortium; Scott Haug, President and owner of Cal Insurance and Associates, and co-founder and vice chairman of Clinic by the Bay; Laurel Lucia, Associate Policy Specialist at the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education; and Jirarut Nu Lettingvangskorn, co-founder of the group Pre-Health Dreamers and the first undocumented UCSF medical student. Please join me in welcoming our panelists. My first question is going to go to Laurel. Can you describe what we know today about the undocumented population in California and where they access health care and what sort of their utilization patterns are, how they use health care differently or the same as everybody else?
Sure. Well, there are about 2.5 million undocumented immigrants in California, and we estimate that about 1.6 million of them are uninsured. And so, of course, in general, uninsured folks access care differently than those with insurance. The past research has shown that immigrants in general use fewer health care services than native-born residents, even when they have insurance. Research by our colleagues at UCLA Center for Health Policy Research found that undocumented immigrants in California use either the same or fewer services when they looked at doctor's visits, emergency room visits, and preventive services. So there are definitely barriers there. And previous research has also found lower rates of hospitalization among undocumented immigrants.
You mentioned that it sounds like several hundred thousand undocumented immigrants have insurance coverage in California. Do we know anything about them and where they get that coverage?
About 25% of undocumented immigrants have private coverage, and the vast majority of that is job-based coverage, either through the individual's job or a family member's job. A small number have coverage that they purchase individually through the non-group market. That was allowed prior to the Affordable Care Act, and they're, undocumented immigrants continue to be allowed to buy private coverage, but they're not eligible to buy that coverage through Covered California, and they're not eligible for any subsidies.
Thanks. Nu, you are undocumented. Until recently, you got your health coverage through, you were uninsured, I guess, and recently got health coverage through a county plan. Can you describe what it's been like in your family and for you personally to try to access care as an undocumented immigrant?
Definitely, thank you. So that's correct. I am undocumented and have been for the past 15 years and still am currently, including my family. And growing up, we never, I think there's this thing called that I just sort of call the immigrant mindset, and I think that's just from personal experience of knowing how growing up we never expected that we had any options for care, and I think compounding onto that is some element of fear, whether it's from of deportation or of anything, because in our heads as undocumented immigrants, any time that you come into contact with law enforcement, the government, it is just scary and it's bad and, potentially could lead to circumstances where you wouldn't want. And so until recently, I think so my parents and our family lives in Fremont in Alameda County. And so we recently found out in 2013 that there's this thing called Health Pack, which is a county program. And there are 58 counties in California, and about 11 or so by last year had allowed undocumented immigrants who live in those counties to access the program, the health programs. And basically since then, I know for my parents, it's been hugely life-changing because now they have some sort of preventative care, and they have high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and they are at least able to get monitored, get the right medications to manage that. So even though it's some sort of basic care, it's important basic preventative primary care that I don't think by experience I know that most undocumented immigrants don't know about.
John, your clinics serve a large part of this population. What do you know about them in terms of their utilization patterns and what barriers they face to getting care?
We know that when a patient first comes in and they have a challenge with legal status, we spend a lot of time just clarifying that we're not going to report them to immigration, that we're not, that it's a safe, secure space for them to be, to it's that, and that's everyone from the receptionist making it okay to the provider and just really making it okay to talk about. The second part of what we do in this system is also try to explain the system. Our American healthcare system is very complex, and when you're coming into this system from another country, it's even more difficult at times. Some places they have organized systems, other places somebody may have been using a traditional healer. And so how do you integrate traditional healing into some of the Latino countries, or how do you integrate Eastern medicine into Western medicine? So we really spend a lot of time working on that. We have an entire set of case management and community health workers that really work with them to explain and handhold them through the system. And handholding through the system could be everything from a registration system, because we have to register the patients. We ask a lot of information, to getting them enrolled into specialty care and all the steps you have to do that, or even just a simple translation system. Many times when we have people come in, English is a second language, and we make sure that we have people who understand and can easily translate. Just because I say it in Spanish doesn't mean it's an accurate translation. One of the things we do for some of our Latino patient population, a nurse practitioner in many Latin countries is a nurse who is learning to practice. If you're coming into the healthcare delivery system and you've been in the United States, you know a nurse practitioner is a graduate level nurse who has gone on for advanced training. So, however, if we talk about certified nurse midwives, that means something to a Latino population. So it's really blending those cultural mixes.
Scott, describe your clinic, what you do, and how you interface with this population.
Well, Clinic by the Bay is part of a program called Volunteers in Medicine. And Volunteers in Medicine has 97 clinics in 28 states around the country. We focus on what we call the working uninsured, the undocumented, those that can't afford insurance even under the Affordable Care Act. What we've found, we've been in existence for 4 years. We do have translators. We're very strongly staffed by volunteers. We have 125 volunteers, focus on retired doctors, nurses, and dentists. And one of the interesting things we found is it is difficult to reach out to these people. They're cautious, they're hesitant. You know, the aspect of you're going to get free health services without any strings is confusing to them. And so when we opened up, it probably took 3 to 6 months before we really started seeing people, because the trust wasn't there. What we've also found is even when they come into the clinic, Now we have about 80% of the people we see are Asian or Pacific Island or Hispanic, actually about 50% Hispanic. And they do have hypertension, diabetes disproportionately. But trying to get, when you talk about wellness programs and prevention, most of the people that we're seeing, they go to the doctor when they're sick. It's very difficult to implement a wellness program, we've found over the last few years.
How has the implementation of the ACA affected your clinic and by extension the undocumented people who might access your services?
Well, the undocumented are not going to qualify for Covered California, so from that standpoint, it hasn't had an impact on as far as the undocumented getting insurance. What has had an impact on us is about 40% of our patients are in the 100 to 138% of the federal poverty level, so they now qualify for Medi-Cal. So what we have seen is we're probably going to have a decrease of about 40% of our patients because of the expansion of Medi-Cal, which quite frankly is good because now they have insurance. We're not complaining about that. But what we've had to do is expand our borders. We were just in four zip codes, and now we're all of San Francisco and all of San Mateo. And it will work its way out. There's plenty of uninsured out there. But again, we're facing the same problems as when we opened up in the four clinics. We're going to have to develop that trust factor outside of, we're right now in Visitation Valley, Portola, Excelsior, and Daly City. And with that expansion, we're going to have to get the trust of those people to have them visit our clinic.
So doesn't that mean that the ACA is indirectly expanding access to the undocumented? Because if your clientele has 40% of your clientele has gone into Medi-Cal, you now have room for more people who can't get into Medi-Cal.
As far as expansion,
most of them would be
undocumented. We very well could see more undocumented in the future.
Right, if you're now undocumented and living outside your former service area, you might now be in your new service
exactly.
area.
Exactly.
And have somewhat greater access to care.
Yeah, we estimate, and we really don't know this for a fact, but the estimate is about 30% of our patients are undocumented. But we don't know that for a fact because we don't ask the question.
John?
When we're talking about the Affordable Care Act, one of the things that's really critical to understand, nationally in the Affordable Care Act, we created a Community Health Center Trust Fund. We allocated from Congress $11 billion, which is really having a significant impact in expanding access to care. And in that expansion of care, there's the Medi-Cal expansion or Medicaid expansion. But it's also care for the undocumented. Because what it does is it gives us a base of funding to get primary care, some limited pharmacy, some behavioral health, some dental services out to undocumented because we have that core base funding. We've been able to open new clinics across California. Here in San Francisco, we opened the Bay Clinic. We took over the Bay Clinic with that. So there's an expansion, because of the Affordable Care Act, of core federal funding that's really critical to the success of the Affordable Care Act. With Clinic by the Bay, as we take on more Medicaid patients, it gives us also more revenue. And with that additional revenue, we can then expand services to additional people. We'll estimate in San Francisco, we'll see about an additional 15,000 patients from San Francisco this year because of the Affordable Care Act. We don't ask people their legal status. That's not an issue for us. We're banned from doing that under federal legislation. But that additional funding allows us to see and pay salaries.
Just for clarification, Clinic by the Bay doesn't take any government money. So from that standpoint, we've been asked to consider expanding to take some Medi-Cal, and that runs totally fundamentally against the way we're set up.
Laurel, as we've talked about, the ACA specifically prohibits Covered California and other state exchanges from accepting undocumented customers, even if they wanted to pay the entire thing with their own money. There's been legislation in California to create a sort of parallel health insurance exchange for this population. Can you describe that and how that would work?
Sure. Last year, Senator Ricardo Lara from Long Beach introduced legislation called the Health for All Act. It's also called Senate Bill 1005. And it would have done two things. It would have expanded Medi-Cal to all low-income Californians, including undocumented immigrants. And it also would have created this parallel exchange. Since the Affordable Care Act prohibits undocumented immigrants from getting coverage through Covered California, the idea behind this bill is it would set up a marketplace that looked similar to Covered California, offered similar plans, and also would allow undocumented immigrants to buy into private coverage, and if they qualified based on their income, they would get the same premium and cost-sharing subsidies that citizens and permanent residents get under the Affordable Care Act. But those subsidies would be state-funded instead of federally funded.
Is there an estimate of how much that would cost?
So our research center, along with UCLA, did some estimates last year that we focused on the Medi-Cal side of the bill. We're still analyzing the marketplace side. But 700,000 undocumented immigrants would be expected to enroll in Medi-Cal if this bill passed, and that would cost the state about $350 million a year. But breaking that down, that turns out to be about 2 cents on every dollar that the state already spends on Medi-Cal. So to close the biggest eligibility gap, the state would have to add 2 cents to every dollar they spend currently.
Great, thanks. Short of that legislation creating this new program for undocumented people, as a future physician yourself, can you think of any steps we could take to make it easier for this population to access care?
Short of the legislation.
I guess sort of informally or just within existing law, are there practices that could change, logistical things, hurdles that are now in the way that could be removed without changing the law?
Right. So I think that as we continue to advocate and try to pass legislation, my hope is certainly that the bill or some form similar to it will hopefully be reintroduced. And I know that there are talks of that going on currently for the next legislative cycle. I think short of that, what do we have? And I think so it was mentioned earlier that folks have access to job-based coverage. I also want to mention that youth, a lot of undocumented immigrant youth, if they are students, should be able to have some form of coverage through school. And whoever, the number of folks that don't fall under those two categories would now have some coverage through county level care, which I mentioned most folks still don't know about. And I think for me, speaking from personal experience, I know that when we first learned about, so the program I signed up for was Health Pack in Alameda County, that I think in that, with speaking to an enrollment counselor, I was asked directly, do you have a social security number? What is your immigration status? And I think I was really taken aback by that. And I think, if I had not, by that point, had gotten so used and open to sharing my status just because I've had other experiences, I would have panicked and walked out the door and not have enrolled, even though I was eligible. And I think that, and then since then, I understand, and I know folks who work at Health Pack and the system that's partly protocol, that folks just screen as a whole based on everything they have on their sheet, and then they kind of on the back end, see, is this person eligible for Medi-Cal or not, or Health Pack, so forth. But you think that there's something small like that, logistically, in terms of being able to train enrollment counselors to be a little bit more aware, a little bit more, cognizant of how to interact with folks who are undocumented. I think that would go a long way. Speaking from somebody who's been there, and I think if it doesn't need to be asked, then we can probably try to figure out a way where folks can get enrolled without being asked. I think there's a lot to be figured out and that can be done.
What percentage of physicians do you think would see an undocumented person who just showed up at their office door without insurance and without access to Medi-Cal?
I would like to say all, but...
I'd like to, but what do you really think the answer is?
I mean, you know, I would like to, and I suppose that depends on, you know, what health system they're a part of, and if they believe that care should be, you know, health care should be tied to something, in my opinion, so man-made as citizenship status, you know, and they think that I certainly believe that it shouldn't be. You know, I don't think that folks getting sick or being healthy should have anything to do with where you're born or what you know, how you, like, where you're born, the circumstances, and whether or not you have a piece of paper or a 9-digit social security number. So,
send those people to Clinic by the Bay.
Absolutely. One of your many new locations. Our first question from the audience tonight is, are any undocumented people covered by their own national health care plans in their country of origin? And I guess by extension, could that coverage somehow be applied to care in the United States? John, do you know?
I know that there's a health center in San Ysidro, which is just over the Mexican border, that the Mexican consulate has been working with the San Ysidro Health Center and some other health centers that have really been targeting Mexican citizens, particularly Mexican citizens, to get care and have the Mexican government pay for it. It's still under negotiations. I entertained a group from Hungary last week of academics who were asking the same kind of questions. So it's been talked about. There's not the systems to set that up because of the differences in currency and how does one relate to the other. The other discussions that have occurred off and on in California have been with the Canadian government. However, I have not heard of anything that's taken an impact yet.
All right. Thank you. Another question from the audience. If we offer health insurance to undocumented immigrants, will that act as a magnet or an incentive for more unskilled people to come across the border knowing that they can get care here? Anybody care to tackle that one? New?
Well, there has been past research serving immigrants and asking them why they come to this country, including undocumented immigrants. And usually there are two answers, one for economic reasons, for better job opportunities, and the second reason is usually to reunite with family. In the surveys that have included, you know, to sign up for public benefits, the fraction of immigrants that, you know, say that's a reason they came is just very tiny.
New?
I think I'd just like to add that, thank you for that question. I think that's a very important question that I think almost everybody has probably considered before. You know, I think whether it's health benefits, other types of benefits, you know, if America suddenly became more favorable in that way, would that really translate to folks? And, you know, and I think a complete no for me as far as I'm concerned. You know, I think from a personal experience, the reason my family immigrated was because we were so, you know, so and so much in debt because of other economic reasons in Southeast Asia from Thailand. And it became about survival. You know, it was about survival. You know, we were not thinking about, oh my gosh, if we get sick when we move to America, we'll have access to care. You know, we're thinking about, do we have food to eat on the table? And I think, you know, I share that with, I think it is an important question, but for me, it's always thinking about, and I guess I'd like to remind everybody to think about, you know, really, like, if maybe we put ourselves in that situation. I think out of necessity and the need for survival, I think most of us actually forego health, you know, in our head. Like, I think I certainly have sacrificed thinking about health when we should be more careful about health.
Thanks. John, if clinics can't and don't ask about legal status, how do you address fears and barriers facing immigrants?
We look at it more from a systems approach. What does the patient need? And then we ask the patient, what would be a barrier to getting to your care? So instead of saying, Scott, are you undocumented? We talk about, how do we get you into the specialty care system? How do we get you into the surgical needs? How do we get you into pharmacy? Do you have adequate financing? Do you have coverage? So it's less a focus on the legal status. Certainly, it's a question since, for all intents and purposes, people that are undocumented cannot access Medicaid or Medi-Cal. There are some things, emergency prenatal care, pregnancy care, but we look at it from a systems, not a legal status.
Last week, the president announced a dramatic executive order to not legalize, but stop deporting, actively trying to deport a large segment of the undocumented population. What do we know about the potential effect of that order in opening up access to care for undocumented people?
John? This morning we received word from the State Health Department that they are unwilling at this point to issue any kind of statement. They were doing an analysis of the executive order. They really wanted to look and see what the executive order says and does, how far it's going, and then see where the Department of Health and Human Services will implement that. Anything else at this point, we feel is speculation until we start to see some regulations. The other part of this whole thing is state Medicaid agencies or Medi-Cal programs, Medicaid programs, are generally at the discretion of governors. So it will also depend on what our governor will want to do. I think this goes back to the whole Lara bill that we were looking at, the expansion that way.
Laurel?
Can I address that one, too? One thing we haven't talked about is the young immigrants in California who are eligible for have been eligible for deferred action since 2012, which is similar to the announcement that Obama made last week, but extended it to parents and also to other childhood arrivals. And so there are 1.2 million Californians who are going to be eligible under the executive action that Obama announced last week. And my understanding of the regulations is that similar to those who received DACA or deferred action status a couple of years ago, that the parents will also be eligible for state-funded Medi-Cal under state policy. The state policy is pretty clear that deferred action is an eligibility criteria. So we don't know how many of those 1.2 million would be eligible for Medi-Cal and how many would enroll. But we've started to do some thinking about it. And under DACA, the Childhood Arrivals Program, about half of those eligible for the program in California have applied and been approved for relief for from deportation and for work authorization. And so we don't know. It may be similar for this group. The application fee is the same. It's a $465 application fee. With the youth and young adults eligible for deferred action, there was a survey of those who didn't apply, and they said that the fee was a barrier, affording the fee. Some of them said that they were missing paperwork, and that was a barrier. Some of them, you know, had fear about giving their information to the government. So some of those same factors may apply for this program. And so not everyone who's eligible is going to be approved for this status. And then, you know, only some of them will be uninsured, and some will have income that's too high to qualify for Medi-Cal. And then even among those who are eligible for Medi-Cal, some may not sign up due to fear for their future immigration status or fear for their family members. And so there's still going to be many undocumented residents in California who remain uninsured. But this does mean that Medi-Cal enrollment could increase.
If I could just quickly add, I suppose I'm trying to paint a picture that I see, which is that for the most part, any access to healthcare won't increase by much. And I say that because, comprehensive immigration reform, the bill that could have passed last year, let's say, and many folks are hopeful, it didn't pass, but I think not many people knew that even if it did, it wouldn't have actually allowed access to healthcare and the ACA for folks who were on that 10, 15 year path, you know. But so now, fast forward to today, I think, yes, it's great that the subset of folks who from last week's announcement who will now have deferred action could potentially, you know, again, the income limit and so forth, and actually there have been a lot of concerns on the back end in terms of actually enrolling those folks. And know that because of AC and, you know, implementation, I'm sure at the state level they've been really backed up by DACA enrollment, not just for undocumented folks, but for everybody. And, you know, so I think for me, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't change much. And I think for the most part, that's why we need to change legislation still for like the LARA bill, because that will really, I think, open it up to as many folks as we have here in California.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Tonight's discussion is Undocumented and Uninsured, underwritten by the California Wellness Foundation. Our panelists are John Gressman, President and CEO of the San Francisco Community Clinic Consortium, Scott Haug, co-founder and vice chairman of Clinic by the Bay, Laurel Lucia, Associate Policy Specialist at the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, and Gerrit Nu Lat Ingvangskorn, co-founder of the group Pre-Health Dreamers and the first undocumented UCSF medical student. I'm Daniel Weintraub, editor-in-chief and project director of the California Health Report, and your moderator. Laurel, you said earlier that the ACA we could spend somewhere in the order of $350 to $400 million in additional Medi-Cal costs by covering this population. Would there be savings to offset that in uncompensated care that the state is now paying for?
One thing I neglected to mention earlier is the reason that it's, you know, it costs 2 cents on every dollar to expand Medi-Cal to everyone, which is, I think, smaller than some people might expect, is that undocumented immigrants who are low income are already eligible for emergency Medi-Cal or pregnancy-related Medi-Cal. And so the state, and that's under a longstanding federal policy. So the state and federal government are already paying for the most costly care for these low-income immigrants. And so our estimate was that about 60% of the costs of comprehensive care are already paid for. So if the state went that additional 40%, they could provide preventive care and, you know, be using those dollars more wisely so that people can get the care they need before they get sick. And that $350 million estimate does include some savings that we estimated for counties providing care to undocumented or to uninsured people in general. So the state gives county dollars to care for the uninsured, and if this population gained coverage under the LARA bill, we would expect that the counties that do provide care to the undocumented would see some savings. I don't have the number in front of me, but that $350 million is net those savings.
Thanks. Here's two related questions. One is, when do any of you think we might see the ACA expand at the federal level to cover undocumented immigrants? And another questioner says, with the nation running record budget deficits that continue to increase, can we really afford to offer taxpayer subsidized health care to undocumented immigrants? Anyone care to answer either half of that?
Can I take
John?
Expansion. I think with the recent election, expansion of the ACA is not going to happen. Unfortunately, I think that just the change has happened. I was there literally on election day, walking the halls of Congress and talking about the future of the Affordable Care Act, and at this point we're going into protection mode. It's just the politics, I think. So I think if we look at that that way. The second part, though, is one of the things we need to keep in mind is that a primary care visit, if we can get a sick patient who's suffering cold, flu, I'm not talking about an emergency or urgent care situation, into a primary care visit we will be saving about a $4,000 uncompensated care visit for a hospital emergency room visit.
One of the interesting things, as you look around the country, I don't know the exact numbers, I'm sure somebody does, but, you know, I think about half of the states didn't pick up the expansion of Medicaid. So, and for our clinics, about two-thirds are in states that didn't expand Medicaid. So I think the idea of expanding ACA under the current situation is not going to happen.
New? Just to add on, from what I remember, I probably would agree that I think expansion, I don't know if that would happen to the ACA, but I think what I want to share was I remember when the comprehensive immigration reform bill was going through, there were a number of studies that were done and reports about, oh, if, you know, sort of the usage and of healthcare and Medi-Cal and Medicaid and how that might affect things. And from what I remember, it basically would have worked that folks already pay into, in terms of undocumented immigrants, already pay a huge amount of what funding goes into, Medicaid and some of these folks, because folks pay taxes, but they don't get any of the benefits back. And so under that context, if some legislation were to pass on immigration reform and folks would have been sort of officially paying on the path to citizenship, I do remember that it was sort of going to help, or that there was like a number in the billion. So, yes.
You want to add something, Laurel? Laurel?
I'm good.
John, what is the political climate for continued funding of community health centers as part of the ACA? Is there any bipartisan support for that?
Historically, community health centers across the country have had wonderful bipartisan support. We've managed to stay out of the political football that's gone on for years and years. Our funding has continuously increased. One of the things we're facing is the Affordable Care Act Trust Fund that we set up for community health centers has we're calling a fiscal cliff that occurs September 30th, 2015. If we don't have some type of reauthorization of this trust fund, then we'll lose $11 billion across the country. So instead of $14.75 billion to cover about 28 million people, we'll lose 75% of that, and the loss will be pretty steep. We're working on that as I speak. That's why I was in Washington a couple of weeks ago trying to address this.
Thanks. Anybody else on that topic? What role do you see community health workers or promotoras playing in informing undocumented members in the community about their options for care? John?
Absolutely, positively critical. Just really, they're the breadth and they're the bridge between people who are living in the community. They're the people that are trusted. They're the people that turn to people. They're the people who can bring someone in. They're the people who talk about their experience. And so they're really, really the backbone. Increasingly, there's a real effort to try to expand the community health worker program and to really refine their skills. We have a mobile medical van that goes out on the streets for homeless people, many of which are undocumented, and they are the backbone of that van. They speak the native language, they understand the cultures, they understand the issues and challenges, and so there's a whole trust. We really need to continue to develop and enhance that program.
New?
I absolutely agree. And it actually, Pre-Health Dreamers, what we actually do is we're an organization that supports the work. Our whole mission is to support undocumented students and immigrants who are aspiring healthcare professionals themselves, whether it's to become physicians, to become nurses, to become, physician assistants, to become the health workers, dentists. So I think that really speaks to why we began, because not only are there, we deal with a lot of actual institutional policy and changing education so that folks can get through the pipeline, but why do we do it? Because we truly believe that folks who come from the community are very fitting for serving that community, right? Because again, you really understand the nuances and the needs and how to reach people, and you understand, oh, if this was my mom, how would she hear about this news? How would she know that she can sign up for this, right? And so, I mean, I think it's hugely important anytime we are able to do that.
Thanks. Scott, you've got lots of connections in the small business community, right? This is kind of a complex question from the audience, but let's see if I can translate it a little bit. The folks who were eligible for the deferred action under President Obama's action last week, if they are allowed to work legally, but they're not eligible for health insurance, is it possible that businesses would see an advantage in hiring them to replace legal workers for whom they'd have to pay the employer mandate tax or fee under the ACA? You understand the question?
Yeah. I don't think so. I mean, the aspect of, and this is not true of every business, for most business, but the aspect of interchanging employees because you can get something maybe a little bit cheaper, it just throws off your whole workplace. And they can't afford to have that kind of change. It doesn't make sense in the ongoing running of their business.
What about just over time in terms of, when they have an opening, would they be more likely to hire someone for whom they don't have to pay insurance fee?
Keep in mind, as far as the insurance is concerned, that's only for businesses with 50 or more employees. So the vast majority of people that I'm representing don't have to provide health insurance because they're less than 50 employees. In fact, if you use 50 as the threshold, I would venture to guess that 98% of the businesses in California are less than 50 employees.
All right. Thank you. Next question. What can you recommend to our undocumented population about how to receive care now? Where can they go? Who should they see? How can we convince them to seek care when they fear being outed as an undocumented person? John?
California Primary Care Association, CPCA, operates a website, CPCA. You put in your zip code, and they will direct you to a community health center. They're generally the nonprofit health centers, but that's always a good starting point. We have health centers in every single county in California. We have 1,800 health centers across the country, and that doesn't include the number of sites. It's just the number of corporations. We went up from 18 million patients 5 years ago to 24 million this year. So look in your telephone directory, look on the Internet, community health center, and just put in your zip code and tell people not to be afraid to call.
Thanks. Scott, what would you add?
Probably the same thing. The one big problem, as I mentioned before, and I think all of us have mentioned it, that the one big problem is the fear factor out there, and the aspect of a lot of these people are afraid and don't trust a lot of people. And if there was some way to get past, you've got to get the information out to people that they trust about what facilities are available. I think John says, look in the phone book or sources that are out there. I think it's going to be hard for them to do that.
So more person-to-person contact, word of mouth. We mentioned the promotoras, community health workers.
Yeah.
Need to do that job in the neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
New?
I would say trying as much as possible to be very clear. And I think, for example, this Covered California has tried to do really well. And I think in last year when open enrollment and so forth, and they were very clear that for that subset of folks who were undocumented parents to children who were citizens, there was some sort of concern that maybe because undocumented parents had to put the information, even though they weren't applying for care, that they would have, somehow been in the system. And they're very clear that that was not the case, and it wouldn't result in any unpleasant circumstance implications. And I think that that's important. I think on the other hand, what has worked well for us is to get the word out to the community. And one way to do that is to support grassroots organizations who are doing this work. I think I mentioned earlier there was a coalition of nonprofit organizations, including the California Immigrant Policy Center, so E4FC, Education for Fair Consideration, Pre-Health Dreamers, a group of us, I think Southern California, who are grassroots, and we kind of came together and said, let's do a health fair. Let's make resources specifically for undocumented communities, you know, like PDFs and so forth, and then you try to spread the word that way. Because again, I think we, you know, those are the organizations that are able to mobilize and to activate folks and to get the word out there.
Thanks. What do we know specifically about how the undocumented receive care in San Francisco and how that might compare to other counties around the state?
Several years ago, San Francisco was being really creative. We created a program called Healthy San Francisco. It is not an insurance program. It is not a managed care product. It's a coverage program. We were the first in the country to create Healthy San Francisco. And what we did was the providers came together to create a system to have, make sure that every patient in our system, and it was Kaiser, it was Brown and Tolan, it was all the health centers in San Francisco, it was Clinic by the Bay when they were in their formative stages, Bart Clinic, to try to make sure that every patient had a medical home or a health home that they would identify with and they would seek their care there. We organized our resources. We tried to make sure that if I was an undocumented person, I was getting my care at Mission Neighborhood Health Center, that, and if I went to Clinic by the Bay, that I would refer back to Mission. Or if I was getting my care at Mission or Clinic by the Bay, I'd refer back to the medical home so that we could really have a better organized kind of system of care. Since that time, Los Angeles County has recently implemented the similar kind of program. So we're beginning to spread a care model, not an insurance model, and there's a key distinction. People know that they have a problem, they need to call a primary care provider. Their primary care provider, whether it's a nurse practitioner, physician, PA, whoever. It might be their dentist will get them into care. But it's we're really about 10 to 15 years ahead here in San Francisco, and that's thanks to all of you.
How does that compare to other counties? You mentioned Los Angeles, but are there counties in California where the undocumented simply don't have access to primary care?
Contra Costa County, picking on our county up to the east of us, the Board of Supervisors allocated a limited amount of funding and have said this is the care for the undocumented. You go over to Central Valley, some counties will not pay for any care for undocumented. There's some lawsuits brewing about that. The same thing goes true for across the country, that there are states where people who don't have care are simply not getting care. They die. I hate to be crass, but that's going back to what we saw in the 1960s. They just aren't welcome there. So California, Central Valley, Northern California, Sacramento has some real limitations about what they will or won't see for people who are undocumented.
That's for primary care. Of course, if you have an emergency and you present at an emergency room, everybody
and you have
eventually
emergency
gets
only Medi-Cal,
seen.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Emergency only Medi-Cal. It's a
emergency
safe
only Medi-Cal. You're eligible
right,
regardless of your status. New, did you want to add something?
I think it's true. I think if they were low income enough, if they were informed of the ways to sign up for it as well. Because we have, and I'm sure it just varies from hospital to hospital in terms of emergency-only Medi-Cal, but to my understanding, you might present at an emergency room and you try to sign up soon or after the fact, and I don't know that that is always the case. We have worked directly with some youth who have had to have emergencies and was not informed, was not aware. So, I mean, of course, I think, but I guess that goes to the umbrella, I think, group of things that we can always try to do better in terms of delivering the actual care.
Thanks. New, maybe you know the answer to this. How are international students sort of classed under all of this? Are they considered legal residents and they're eligible for programs, or are they not eligible?
So international students have visas and have legal status in the sense that they're currently holding a visa that's recognized, and they can get and request social security numbers and so forth. So again, because they're students, for the most part, most universities I'm sure most folks are able have an option of signing up through the school system and universities. I don't foresee that they would, and I'm not I suppose an expert on this, but I don't foresee that they would not be able to sign up through other forms if they're able to.
Laurel?
I'm not sure about Medi-Cal, but under the Affordable Care Act, the definition of lawfully present for the marketplaces, like Covered California, is actually relatively broad, besides excluding undocumented. And I believe international students are considered lawfully present and eligible even for subsidies if they're income eligible.
Okay. Thanks. Let's talk again about the LARA bill, which would create a system in California to cover this population. What specifically stymied it this year in the legislature, and what's the outlook for next year? With the Democrats in control of the legislature, why you'd think that something like this would pass? Why not?
So I look at Laura because I know that the center, and they've worked to produce numbers and the studies in terms of the costs that the bill would, you know, could theoretically, and she shared that. And I think earlier this year, that what had a big part to do with it was I think some of the folks, the elected officials had certain concerns, mainly because of the costs. Which I think, again, anything you pass that big is gonna come with a cost. But I also think it's about, you know, where we place what we value as a state, right? And so and thinking with a long term investment. I think on the other hand, I also know that there might not have been the needed level of urgency. In the sense that it was called not a this year bill or this year issue. And to me, I think that that's not good enough. And I think that perhaps that's because the stories of the communities who are needing care right now are not reaching the right people who are making decisions. And hopefully we can continue to work to change that for next year.
I do want to,
Scott,
this aspect of cost is really critical. If things go to appropriations, with the word out there generally is if it's over $50,000, it's going to die. So you put up something $350 million, that's going to be a uphill fight.
John? Real clear, it's cost, but it's also financing of it. How is, as Scott was saying, how is this going to be paid for? The governor is pretty clear about his priorities. This was not one of his priorities. The rainy day fund was other kinds of things that were other priorities, the Amtrak line. There is negotiations going on between in closed doors behind key advocacy groups about how are you going to generate the revenue to support this. So we've got the cost on one end. How are you going to have the revenue to support this cost? There was also discussions and disagreements about how much it actually costs. The Department of Finance said one thing, and advocates said another. So there, it was the first introduction by a state senator to really start looking at this in a comprehensive kind of way. It was a great starting point.
Laurel?
Yeah, I agree with John that financing is the primary barrier, and that kind of shows what a different place we're at in California than in other states. That the question didn't seem to be so much whether undocumented immigrants should be covered, but how and when. And yeah, I believe that folks are looking at the financing of it, and Senator Lara is planning to reintroduce in January, is my understanding.
Do you think he'll include a financing mechanism when he reintroduces the bill?
Absolutely. It's coming up in this shortly.
Is it going to be a tobacco tax?
Not going into what I'm hearing.
20 questions. Is it going to be?
The other thing I'd mention about, I think, why people are hopeful that this could happen soon is, you know, California is kind of going through two cultural shifts, I think, both in terms of healthcare. California has gone above and beyond in implementing the Affordable Care Act and has a history of including immigrants in coverage that are left out federally. And then secondly, you know, in the last couple of years, the governor has signed a lot of bills expanding rights for immigrants, whether it's driver's licenses or allowing undocumented immigrants to get professional medical licenses. There have been a number of bills over the last few years that have set California kind of in the forefront of expanding immigrant rights.
Thanks. We have a question from the audience about mixed status families. How do you see issues relating to documentation affecting family members who are documented? In other words, are people not signing up for Covered California, even if eligible, because their mom, dad, sister, et cetera, are not documented? New?
Just so everybody's clear, mixed status in that term means that, again, some folks in the family are undocumented and some folks are documented. I think that that is an actual concern in the community. I think that, again, anytime when, particularly when you think about folks who just are not connected and they don't know, you know, let's say think about parents of folks and a little bit older folks who, you know, they're not in school, they're not paying attention to the news, and they're not, you know, I think it's very real that folks are concerned that, oh, just when you sign up for this thing, again, it will lead to some other thing and immigration and ICE. So I think, again, it's important to try to make it clear that at least here in California, with Covered California, I know that they try to be very clear. I know when you sign up on the website, if you get that far, that's not a part of it, and that folks will be, you know, won't be persecuted, will be protected, even if they're undocumented, but their children are eligible for Covered California.
One other thing I'd say about mixed status families is I think there's some hope that as a result of Obama's announcement last week, that some of these mixed status families, the citizens and legal permanent residents in those families, are going to be more likely to sign up for coverage for this reason. They'll have less fear because, you know, they'll have relief from deportation. And so that could, you know, increase coverage among citizens and legal permanent residents as well.
Thanks. Another audience question. Can you comment on the legal aspects of any uninsured patient, but particularly an undocumented patient, being billed several times what an insured patient's contracted rate might pay for the same service? John?
That's a loaded question. Because different, if you're insured, it depends on what your insurance company or HMO negotiated with their providers. So it's the whole billing system is really complicated. Then when you throw in there uncompensated care for undocumented, it gets even more complicated. I wish I had a more definitive answer, but this is really tough to answer. I don't know if that answers the question.
Can anyone else chime in on that? Scott, Laurel, new.
The question one time.
The problem of uninsured patients being charged more than several times more than the contracted rate that an insured patient would get for the same service. And is that just one more hurdle that the undocumented face in getting access to care?
Certainly what happens is many times the person who's not insured, whether their legal status is, they're going to be billed the top of what the actual fees are. And then you've got other kinds of factors that play in. right or wrong. It's our American healthcare system.
Okay. Last question from the audience. You've talked a lot tonight about the fear factor. Given the immigration services tactics, isn't that fear to a certain degree warranted?
Not so much in San Francisco, I don't think.
What about in the rest of California?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency and the Department of Health and Human Services at a federal level have both released clarified policies saying that if you submit information about yourself and your family members for the purposes of applying for health care, that information will not be used for immigration enforcement. And I don't think that those policies have been spread around enough. I think the word needs to be spread. And then also, understandably, even, you know, some immigrants seeing that guidance might still be fearful.
New?
I think that in terms of trying to access healthcare specifically, I think that I don't usually, to my understanding, that there, I don't usually hear of and know of cases and stories where folks, specifically because they were in the hospital somewhere, you know, end up being so. And that's a great, and that's a good thing. It's good that there are clarifying policies. I think that it is warranted in general because folks still are getting deported every day as we sit here. You know, I think particularly whether it's just because they come into contact with law enforcement because of some, for whether petty theft or something small or traffic light, like tickets and this and that. And I think, you know, what I have heard is clinics in Arizona where doctors set up clinics and then patients came and then they said, hold on here. And then immigration comes and picks them up. You know, I think that that, again, there's the fear is warranted, but not, I would say, specifically because of, you know, just because you sign up directly through the system to access care and you.
All right. Thank you. Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there's time for only one last question for each of you. So I'd like you each to answer this, if you will, starting with John. How do you see access to care for the undocumented population changing in California over the next 5 years?
I think as we go forward, we're going to have more and more insured people. With the insured people, there's going to be greater competition for appointments. We also have a tremendous provider shortage coming, so I'm really fearful that the undocumented will be squeezed out in some kind of way because we'll have to meet access standards.
Thanks. Scott?
Well, as far as access to care in our program, we have a commitment that if you register, we will. You'll see a doctor in 2 weeks. And that's a major factor in why people are coming to the clinic. The other aspect is that we're agile enough that if we see somebody today, we can see them again in a few days. Well, you can't do that in a lot of the programs that are out there. But I do think of the broader nature. You know, 5 years is going out far enough, and I do think there will be some kind of legislation maybe within that five-year period.
Laurel?
I guess if I had to guess, I would guess that in the next 5 years, California will pass something like the LARA bill that would expand health insurance coverage to undocumented immigrants.
New?
I would agree. I would hope that at least at the state level, we get to the point where you know, we all feel and the sense of urgency enough and are able to figure out, you know, passing legislation that reflects, I think, the values that we preach, that we hold. So I don't think anything's going to happen from the federal level, unfortunately, very unfortunately. I hope that there'll be maybe more undocumented healthcare professionals to meet the coming, hopefully at that point, increased access to care. So that's something hopeful in my end.
All right. Thank you. Our thanks to the California Wellness Foundation for underwriting this program and to our panelists, John Gressman, President and CEO of the San Francisco Community Clinic Consortium, Scott Haug, co-founder and vice chairman of Clinic by the Bay, Laura Lucia, Associate Policy Specialist at the UC Berkeley Center for Labor Research and Education, and Jerunu Latvangskorn, co-founder of the group Pre-Health Dreamers and the first undocumented UCSF medical student.
Every time.
We also thank our audiences here and on the radio and the internet. I'm Daniel Weintraub, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned.